music is that? That's not Bill Buckmaster's music. That's something else. Hey, and this is Shelley Fishman sitting in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. And for the fourth or fifth time in a row now, one year apart, I have James Real with me as my guest for the entire hour.
Yeah, it is my great pleasure to be here while Bill is off hugging trees in the Northwest.
Yeah, really. And you know, James is about the most knowledgeable music guy I know. He's the director of classical music for Arizona Public Media. He runs here to get here after he finishes.
The biggest mistake women can make.
His stint on his morning show on KUAT-FM. And today, what we're going to do is we're going to listen to American music. But this is American music that was written during times of adversity. And I thought, and James and I talked about this a few weeks ago, we thought that, number one, it'd be a really good idea to focus on American music and American composers, for the most part, and also to take a look at times of adversity and how Americans and American listeners and American composers react during times that are, you know, less than pleasant. And we're certainly living through one of those right now.
I was wondering where you got that idea.
Yeah. So we're gonna take a look at four. We have four segments in the show, and so we're gonna look at four segments, four times of adversity. We're gonna look at the Civil War, we'll look at World War I. We'll look at the Great Depression between World War I and World War II, and then we'll take a look at World War II itself. James, thank you for being here. It's always an honor and a thrill to be working with you. So the lead-in music that you briefly heard was the Cotillion by Francis Johnson. Who was Francis Johnson?
Francis Johnson was based in Philadelphia. He was pretty much America's first black composer. And he made his living writing music for balls. He did a lot of ballroom music. He did some marches for public affairs, that sort of thing. And that was pretty typical of what Francis Johnson did. He was quite successful in his time.
Yeah. What made his music as a black composer different from, let's say, Stephen Foster's music?
Hardly anything at all. And I think that was the key to his success. Now, if you want to talk about black music at that time in America, it was derived from African work songs,
right.
And they would have these call and response songs on the plantations that turned into spirituals. But Francis Johnson was writing music in the white environment and doing quite well.
Uh-huh. And how did people listen to music? We forget that's, you know, 200 years ago or 150 years ago.
It was always live, of course, and a lot of it was homemade. You would buy some sheet music by Francis Johnson or Stephen Foster. You'd take it home and you'd sit in your parlor, which we now call the living room, and you'd sit at your upright piano or strum your guitar and play and sing with your family and your friends.
So was there a large market for sheet music in those days?
There was. There was a huge market for sheet music, a great demand, and it came and went in terms of popularity, sort of like the top 40 hits did in the mid-20th century. But instead of buying 45s, people were buying sheet music.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the things that has characterized American music, even through times of adversity, has been something called American escapism. For whatever reason, we want to feel good. And it is rare, or maybe exceptional, when we get songs that are meant for public consumption that really reflect the times in terms of the adversity that people were going through.
That's right. Certainly during the period we're talking about, which is through World War II. Now, of course, in the 60s, things changed.
Absolutely.
But during the century we're talking about, that's exactly right.
Let's listen to an exception, or not an exception, actually. This really kind of proves the point. It's a song by Stephen Foster, and it's called Hard Times Come Again No More.
Let us pause in life's pleasures and count its many tears while we all sub sorrow with the poor. There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard times come again no more.
So that's Stephen Foster, but it's not Stephen Foster the way you're used to hearing him.
No, it's Stephen Foster with a social conscience. He wrote that song to sell to people who could afford to buy music, to get them to sympathize with people who'd fallen on hard times. We have to remember that from the very beginning of the United States as a nation, we were in constant recession cycles. There was a recession coming straight out of the founding, and then there would be relief for a year, maybe 3 years, and there'd be another three-year recession. And these were pretty bad. And Foster wrote this song in 1854, I think, coming out of a pretty bad recession. Business had gone down like 18-19% during that two-year period. And so times were tough for a lot of people.
And so much of Stephen Foster's music is very European. It's very straight music. It's the kind of stuff that, you know, could easily have been written in Ireland or in Scotland or in England. The tunes were typically easy to remember. They were, you know, 8 bars A, 8 bars A, 8 bars B, and then a repeat of 8 bars A. Easy to remember, easy to sing, limited vocal ranges. But what we just heard was somebody kind of articulating that music in a way that was uniquely American.
Right, right, because until about the time of Stephen Foster, American music was essentially English music.
Right.
Or in the mountains, it was Irish or Scottish music. But we didn't have our own kind of music until Foster started trying to develop it like this.
Right, and then we had minstrel shows.
Right.
And we had the influence of churches, very often black churches, that changed the flavor of what was Scotch, Irish, Scottish, Irish, and English tunesmithing into something that became, over the next century, uniquely American. We have another composer that we should talk about a little bit, Frederick Fennell.
Conductor, rather than composer. But Fennell is known to a lot of people for his work. As the centennial of the Civil War was approaching, Fennell and the Eastman Wind Ensemble put together a big collection of music of the Civil War, which sold very, very well. It exposed a lot of people for the first time to music that had been popular 100 years before.
Okay, let's listen to one. It's called We Are Coming, Father Abram. So that has a kind of a militaristic feel.
Such
to
a
it.
Jolly way to march off to get slaughtered. Yeah, that was actually a recruiting song at the beginning of the Civil War for the North, because Father Abraham Lincoln, had put out the call for enlistment. And this is the song that was used to rouse interest in joining the Union Army.
Wow, did it work?
It did. It did quite well, and they had to replenish it again and again and again. I mean, you follow this with When Johnny Comes Marching Home, right? But yeah, it's upbeat. It's not, oh, this is a horrible time in America, and gosh, what are we going to do? It's, hey, this is a great campaign that we're on. We're going to make things right together.
Right, but there was no sense of sadness in that, no sense of tragedy.
No, well, it was early in the war, and frankly, if you're trying to recruit soldiers,
right,
you don't want to emphasize what they're in for.
Okay, so there's no radio, there's no television, there's no phonograph at this point. We're just beginning to see the beginnings of photography, and this is stuff that people would hear on the street, in parades. They would play it in their homes, in their parlors.
And the soldiers would sing songs in camp, too. In fact, going back to the Stephen Foster Hard Times Come Again,
right,
No More, there was a reviled ration called hardtack. And so the soldiers changed it to hardtack Come Again, No More.
That's great. Great piece of trivia.
Yeah.
So we're going to move to the next segment, and the next segment is going to be World War I. Before we get there, I suppose I need to pay the bills and help Bill Buckmaster on vacation continue his sponsorship of several of the people that you've really heard a lot from if you listen to the Buckmaster show. And one of those is Silver City in Grant County. because they're really ready to welcome you back with open arms as the states open up and the cities open up and we stop social distancing. Just 3 hours east of Tucson, there's so much to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, where there is plenty of social distancing, and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many, many things to do and the great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. I'm pleased to be with James Reel here, substituting for Bill Buckmaster, and we'll be back after this break.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Well, we're back after a little bit of silence. We apologize for that. This is Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, and I've got here in the studio James Reel, and we're talking about American music during times of adversity. We're up to World War I. And we're going to listen to that for just a couple of seconds more and see if you can guess who's singing. It's So that's Enrico Caruso singing Over There.
He had a job in New York. He was singing at the opera company.
With the Metropolitan Opera Company, actually. And he recorded a lot of things, and that's one of the things that was so different about World War One, just in terms of technology, from, say, the Civil War, which we were listening to in the last segment, is that in 1877, we started getting something called phonograph. And it started off with Edison here in the United States, and they were cylinders, but they soon became flat records. And it became possible to get pretty decent recorded sound, and it changed everything.
It did. Not only did you not have to do it all yourself anymore, but you could hear how the top talent in the world was doing it, more or less. The fidelity was limited, but it was unlike anything that had ever been able before.
So what happened to people practicing the piano and being able to buy and play sheet music?
Well, how many of your friends have pianos in their parlors these days? I think that's the answer. Aside from garage bands that teenagers put together, there's not a whole lot of that going on anymore.
Right. So the phonograph made it possible to hear what the original composer more or less had in mind when they actually composed the piece, and to hear how in reality it was preserved for, you know, all eternity. And clearly there are other singers who sang Over There without an Italian accent, probably without the same skill, but that brings us, of course, to the archetypical World War One and pre-World War One talent that we associate with songs like Over There, by the composer of Over There, George M. Cohan.
That's right. Well, you know, that became his signature song in many ways. It was used in the Jimmy Cagney movie about him, Yankee Doodle Dandy, which was the other George M. Cohan signature tune. But it became incredibly popular during World War One, which was a good thing for Woodrow Wilson, because he'd campaigned for re-election on the notion that he would keep us out of war. Now, the war was raging in Europe, and we almost got ourselves into another Mexican-American war during the Revolution down south of the border, but Wilson promised to keep us out. Well, it became impossible to keep us out, and so he had to save face by rallying the country around him and making this look like a just cause and something that we really needed to be responsible for. The song tells us that we are responsible for saving Europe.
Right, and interesting. I mean, people don't necessarily think through the timelines, but the war in Europe started in August of 1914. And here it was 1917, and we still weren't in it. So they had been fighting in the trenches for 3 years. It was changing technology. It was changing the way we thought about Europe. And what people don't realize is that here in the United States, by 1917, there were more immigrants of German origin than there were of British origin here in the United States. So it was not an easy thing to get the United States kind of riled up for joining a war essentially against Germany and Austria.
And the Germans at that time were not the face of evil that they would be made out to be during World War II. It was just another power in Europe that was not getting along with other powers in Europe. It's not as if we had to save the world from pure evil.
Right. And, of course, there's been history and revised history and re-revised history about who started World War I and who was at fault and all of that. But you're absolutely right. This was a typical European war, except it was on a grander scale, and hundreds of thousands of people got killed every time there was a military offensive, because they popped their heads up above the, you know, out of the trenches and get mowed down by the hundreds of thousands. They'd dig new trenches, and then they'd stay there for a couple of months and try it again.
Mm-hmm.
So there was nothing optimistic or anything that you'd really want to head into in this war, and then we get Over There or some of the other very escapist music that didn't really tell the story of the war, but was meant to rev people up and get them going.
That's right. Forget about the reality of the war. We're just going to go over there and take care of it and come home.
And
with the flu, of course.
The Spanish flu. But during that period of time, American music had changed significantly. First of all, there was Tin Pan Alley. So Tin Pan Alley actually existed. It was the 28th Street in New York City between Broadway and Fifth Avenue. And what was Tin Pan Alley?
Well, you probably have a better technical description than I do, but Tin Pan Alley was the place, sort of like the equivalent of the Garment District. It's the place where the songwriters and publishers congregated, and that's where they cranked out most of the popular songs of the day.
Absolutely. They would get the sheet music. Composers would try out their songs for publishers, and it was a cacophony of open windows and what you would hear. And we're not talking about minor league composers. We're talking about people like Jerome Kern, Irving Berlin, George Gershwin, Cole Porter. These were the people who were going to make American music for the next 50 or 60 years. And they were doing it all at the same time. They were all born around the same time. Some of them lived longer than others. Irving Berlin, who couldn't notate his own music. He didn't read music. At least that's the rumor.
There was a rumor that he had a special piano with a lever so that it would move the keys around so he could play in different keys.
Right. And Irving Berlin writes some of the most popular music that really redefines American music. And it starts off prior to the war. He was his parents had migrated from Poland, I believe. He left home at age 13 to essentially sing in bordellos around New York. And by the time he was 17, he had composed several songs and was well on his way to building a fortune.
Well, you know, starting out in a bordello as a musician is not such an uncommon thing,
right?
Because Johannes Brahms started out that way, playing piano in a bordello, and another composer we'll probably get to, Scott Joplin, did as well.
You mentioned Scott Joplin because here we now have the influence of another black man who changes American music significantly and influences all these other guys.
Right. He was the father of ragtime music. He was not in any way the only composer, but he was the king. He was much imitated. And once he'd gotten things underway, he even experimented with the rag format as well.
Mm-hmm. So while we're talking about Scott Joplin, let's listen to not one of his upbeat rags, but something called Solace. And it's a tune that he calls a Mexican serenade.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea how authentic or not that is.
Well, I can tell you about that once we hear a little bit
of it. Okay, let's listen to Solace by Scott Joplin. That's Philip Dyson at the piano.
Yeah, now what makes that not exactly Mexican but Latin is that rhythm that Joplin is using. It's not a usual ragtime rhythm, it's an habanera rhythm. You know, in the habanera from Carmen,
dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. Exactly.
Yeah. He's using that rhythm to give it a more Latin feel.
And interesting that he calls it Solace.
Well, I don't think he did. He called it Mexican Serenade, but what always happened with Joplin's music is he wouldn't bother to put the title on it because the publisher would have these engravings at hand to illustrate the covers. You know,
sure,
a nice picture on the cover. And so the publisher would just come up with a title to go with whatever picture he put on the cover. And in this case, he had an engraving of an attractive young woman looking thoughtful or maybe unhappy. And so he thought that Solace would be a good title.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes along with the mood of the music.
Yeah, I've been playing it at home. I'm playing on the piano, and it's not as easy as it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is this, Philip Dyson is a classical pianist, and he imbues this music with a certain subtlety. that you don't usually hear when you hear, you know, upright pianos slightly out of tune playing Scott Joplin.
Yeah, Scott Joplin has been accepted as an art music composer.
Right. And you don't get any sense, again, in this music that there's a war going on. So again, here we are in America fighting a war and listening to music that doesn't give you that indication.
But it does give us solace.
Yes. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be back after that break.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. I'm here with James Reel.
Hello.
And we're talking about American music during periods of crisis. What you just heard was William Warfield singing Old Man River from the Broadway show Showboat. We'll talk about that in a second. But first, I really do need to thank Tom Fairbanks, who's sitting as our engineer and producer, doing stuff that he doesn't necessarily always have to do and doing a great job of it. So thank you. So, Old Man River, Showboat. We were talking a little bit before about Tin Pan Alley.
Mm-hmm.
So the composer of Showboat is Jerome Kern.
Right.
And the lyricist is a guy by the name of Oscar Hammerstein II. And this is a show that was produced in 1927. So it's just before the Depression. And a lot of things have changed. We have phonograph. We have radio. We have a whole different way of listening to music. And Jerome Kern, a Jewish kid from, you know, from first generation from New York, and Oscar Hammerstein, neither one of whom had been west of the Hudson River, is writing about the Mississippi River. What do we take from that?
Well, this particular song, although you can overlook it as you're enjoying Showboat, the song has to do with two things. One is race, and the other is the working class.
Yes.
Because it's sung by a black stevedore on the ship. And the original lyrics are full of the, you know, dems and dats and deezes that the singers would eventually toss out and sing in more standard English, so it wouldn't seem like such a minstrel song, which musically it does not. It's this recognition that whatever strife there may be in race relations, labor relations, nature, the river, the Mississippi River is just going to roll along. It doesn't really care about us. The world keeps moving, no matter what we're doing to ourselves.
So what we're beginning to get here is a social consciousness in American music. And we'll hear more about it as we talk about World War II, because the lyricist here, Oscar Hammerstein, was dead serious about this stuff. And Showboat, which is a beautiful entertainment, probably the first full book musical, if you will, and it's about misogyny and racism. It's also about love. But interesting, the hit tune, the first hit tune from Showboat is a song called Make Believe. We could make believe you loved me. We could make believe that you loved me too. Or make believe I loved you, make believe you loved me too. So it is again about this whole idea of escaping from reality. So here they are on a showboat. I mean, these are not rich people. There's a lot of stuff going around that is unpleasant. But people, in order to speak about what's going on, they need to make believe. And that's what the song says. It's just so honestly different from what we've heard in the past. But also, this is one of the most tuneful shows ever written. Mm-hmm. I mean, one hit tune after the next. If listeners are not familiar with the score, I would recommend listening to some of these great songs, Old Man River, Make Believe, You Are Love, After the Ball, which wasn't written by Kern, but was interpreted into the show by Kern. And you don't get any feeling here that there's a depression on the way.
No, although, you know, there'd been a crash in 1920.
There had been.
A post-war crash.
Absolutely.
And there'd been ups and downs in the 1920s. We think of it as a time of champagne and short skirts and high times, but there were economic problems along the way, just as there always had been. Right.
So another thing kind of happened during the late 20s and early 30s, and it was called movies.
Mm-hmm.
talking movies. The first talkie, theoretically, was a movie called The Jazz Singer, starring Al Jolson. He sings a number of songs in that show that
in blackface.
Absolutely, in blackface. And it was amazingly popular. And Al Jolson became the face of recorded music for almost 5 years. But once the producers in Hollywood got to understand how popular musicals could be. Right smack dab in the middle of the Depression, they produced lots of musicals, but one that was most popular was called Top Hat. And Top Hat starred Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. Mm-hmm. And they were singing songs like Dancing Together, Cheek to Cheek, like the Depression had never happened.
That's right. It was all a time of escapism. That's when the screwball comedy was born.
Right, right. But there was some understanding that things weren't going well. And there's a song that came to characterize American music during the Depression called Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? And we're gonna listen to it, sung by Al Jolson. It was sung by many others, but this one is particularly interesting.
Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick, mortar, and lime.
Doesn't get sadder than that, James.
Well, you know, there's an interesting bit of trivia about this song. The melody is based on a Russian Jewish lullaby.
Right.
Which you can actually hear better in the Bing Crosby version. I mean, there are so many recordings of this vying for attention at the same time. Jolson sounds like a guy on the street holding out the tin cup. You believe him as somebody who's really down on his luck. Der Bingle sang it more slowly and mournfully, and Rudy Valley sang it jauntily, even.
Yep. You get different interpretations of it. But the words are just so telling.
Oh, yeah.
They're just
I so built. Horrible. I built this land, and now look.
Right.
What have I got?
Right. I have to stand in a breadline. So there is a recognition that the Depression is happening, that it's happening to people. And there's also in these songs the increasing influence of black music, the increasing influence of jazz and jazz rhythms. At the same time, again in the 30s, we get these Jewish kids from Tin Pan Alley, Ira and George Gershwin, and they write an opera called Porgy and Bess. Now, mm-hmm. What's that about?
Well, it's about life in a place called Catfish Row on the coast of South Carolina. Poor black community trying to get by, and there's love trouble. And I don't think there's a single white character in the whole thing.
The sheriff.
The sheriff. Yeah, well, of course. Of course. If you got a sheriff, there's got to be white. But
nothing changes. It's all the same.
No, but it's about a black community and their particular concerns in their life of poverty, but they're trying to get by.
And by a novel by DuBose Hayward, who's
right,
white.
Right.
And so here's this team of New York composers and lyricists, and they write this American opera that people scratched their heads and said, what right do they have to do it? But here's this poor black community with strife going on like crazy, and yet there's this sense of optimism. Everybody knows the song Summertime.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also this kind of shady character in the opera.
Sport and Life.
Mm-hmm. And he's got this optimistic view of we're going to get out of here and everything's going to be okay. Let's listen to a song from Porgy and Bess. It's There's a Boat That's Leaving, and we're going to hear Cab Calloway sing it.
Oh.
There's a boat that's leaving soon for New York. Come with me, that's where we belong, sister. You and me can live a high life in New York.
As we fade out Cab Calloway and Porgy and Bess, that is as optimistic as music gets. I mean, it's we're going to escape north to New York, where the composers are from.
Right.
And we're going to live the high life there, and everything's going to be great. And this was 1935. When people are escaping the Dust Bowl and things couldn't be worse, but we get this sense of optimism and those rhythms that will come to really characterize rock and roll and jazz and Broadway music going into the next period we're going to look at, which is World War II after the break. But before we go there, I should mention that since 1970, Green Things has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. Green Things is on a lovely 13-acre site that's also the home to the Socolo Village and all of those fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art items. Green Things on River Road, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthingsaz.com and socolovillage.com. I'll be back with James Reel, and we'll talk about World War II and American music right after this break.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky. Oh, what a beautiful moon.
OK, Okay, so this is Shelley Fishman and James Reel here in the studio live, coming back and substituting for Bill Buckmaster, who's on vacation this week. And that was the opening moments from a Broadway show called Oklahoma. Not Tulsa, Oklahoma, just Oklahoma.
It's okay.
And in 1943, we're in the middle of the war. Actually, we're at the beginning of the United States entry into the war. Mm-hmm. And what we hear is birds chirping and there's a bright golden haze on the meadow. What's that about?
Well, that's Australian Hugh Jackman doing his best American accent and not doing Wolverine. But no, it's trying to revive this notion of American optimism,
right,
which really hadn't been much of a thing until the 20th century. But by the time we're approaching mid-century, we're through the Depression. We're trying to manufacture some optimism along with all the war material. And in part, this is escapism, as we've been talking about. In part, it's to rally us together as Americans who have this good character in common in this grand land in front of us.
Right. And this is Richard Rodgers as the composer. And the lyricist is that guy who wrote the lyrics for Showboat, Oscar Hammerstein II. Now, we know that he's a deadly serious guy. So what's Oklahoma really about?
Well, depends on how you interpret
there
it.
There you go.
What do you have in mind, Shelley? Because I don't want to go off on a tangent.
Okay. Oklahoma is about range wars in Oklahoma. And it's about the ranchers and the farmers who can't get along. And what Oklahoma tries to do is bring them together in ways that in some productions work pretty well and in other productions really show the darkness that Oscar and Hammerstein were, that Oscar Hammerstein and Richard Rodgers were trying to portray here. So yes, there's that optimism, but there's also an undercurrent that reflects the times, that this is a time of war. And this is about a war in an emerging state in the United States, and people just couldn't get along. And there's a pretty bad villain in this story as well.
Poor Judd is dead.
Yeah, poor Judd is dead. And they make some fun of it, but Judd, in the second act of that show, almost wins.
He's a very interesting character.
Right. So we have Rodgers and Hammerstein. We're still back to the origins of American music. And with these very serious guys, in a very American way, we had a couple of Europeans coming to the States and also influencing the way music was made. Dvorak lived here for a couple of years. Johann Strauss did some fundraising here and wrote some waltzes here. And Kurt Weill, who was driven out of Germany, he was a Jewish guy, and came here and started writing musical shows and some operetta-type stuff, all very strange musically.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one show that he wrote called One Touch of Venus, also 1943, and you wouldn't get a clue that this was anything but magical thinking. This is about a statue that comes to life and becomes a living Venus.
Speak low when you speak love. Our summer day withers away too soon, speak low when you speak love.
And we're going to cut that short. That's Speak Low from One Touch of Venus. It was sung by Eileen Wilson from the movie. But again, you don't get the sense that there's any desperation going on. Back to Rodgers and Hammerstein for a second, James.
Okay.
One of the things that they deal with a lot is racism and the whole idea that racist things happen and they're systemic. They're not things that we really kind of always see. In a show that was after World War II, but it takes place in World War II in South Pacific, we hear this from the lieutenant, the Marine lieutenant in the show.
I do not believe this is born in you. I do not believe
it. It's not born in you. It happens after you're born.
So lyrics that along with the music that is thrusting and really beating down on you, you get this guy talking about the racism that is inured in him that makes it impossible for him to love the girl that he's met in Polynesia.
Right, but there's also this idea that it's not natural.
It's not natural.
You've got to be taught to be racist and to see people as others.
Right, very serious stuff. We're running out of time. I want to thank you, James, for coming in and talking about periods of unwell-being in our our history and how musicians and composers and lyricists have dealt with it. And on the way out, we're going to listen to Bernstein, because Bernstein writes, again, in World War II, but after World War II, New York, New York, from the show On the Town.